On a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being the worst time to sell an agency and 10 being the best time to sell an agency, just from a tax perspective,
I
where
would
do you
say
think we sit?
an 8 or a 9.
Wow. What would you say is the number one biggest mistake tax-wise that sellers make?
25 and 30% of insurance agencies first set up as C corporations. You paid my corporation $1 million. The first problem is that's income to my corporation. Well, great. How do I get that money out of my corporation? Well, I can take it as salary. Problem with that? That's ordinary income tax rate. Second thing is I could go, well, I'll leave it in my corporation. Okay, that's currently a 21% tax rate, but it's in the corporation. How does it get out of the corporation and into my pocket? If I take it out as dividends, it's now going to be taxed at 15%. Well, gee, 21% and 15% is 36%. It's just as if I paid ordinary income tax rate.
Welcome to the Insurance Stream. I'm your host, Abe Bowling. Excited to be talking to John Persky with Optimum Performance Solutions again today. He is one of the industry experts, hands down, when it comes to the sale of an insurance agency and all the implications that go along with it. We are talking today about purchase price allocation, how to set your agency up for minimum tax liability possible. Some of this stuff starts years in advance, making sure that you're set up as the right entity type. And some of these things can't be planned in a year or two. So this one is for everybody, because everybody will eventually, at some point in time, more than likely, sell their insurance agency. And if we don't do it, you know, maybe our successors will. So this one is imperative for anybody that owns an insurance agency out there to know what the ramifications are of what we're doing right now to make sure that we're set up for success in the future. We will be right back with John Persky right after this.
Are you an insurance agent needing access to more carriers? Insurance Professionals offers agents instant access to top national home, auto, commercial, and life carriers. Our free multi-rater allows you to quote all lines of insurance with one data entry process, and quotes are available instantly. Our program provides direct carrier access to agents, so there is no middleman underwriters to wait on. Simply quote your insureds with our free multi-rater, pick the quote you want, and log into the carrier to bind directly on their website. We charge no upfront or monthly access fees. Get started today at becomeaninsurancepro.com. That's becomeaninsurancepro.com.
All right, I'm here with John Persky once again. John has been on this podcast before in this series. And because he is probably one of the smartest people that I've talked to, I wanted to have him back and get some more information. This time, John is a CPA. He's been working in the insurance industry, insurance agency industry specifically. How many years?
Too many than I care to count.
At least 35, maybe.
Yeah,
maybe
that's so. Yeah, that's okay. About right.
It's about right. Okay, so you got lots
when
of.
I was 12.
Oh wow, that is a long time. No, I know. So I was gonna say that might be a little more than 35. Right. Anyway, you've been a CPA. You've handled mergers and acquisitions for a long time. You've seen a lot of them come and go under different federal codes, tax codes, different rates. So we want to talk about that. But first, you're a scuba diver. And I wanted to ask you, how do you breathe when your face goes underwater? Because when I tried snorkeling, I've never been scuba diving, but I'm really freaked out with scuba diving. Because when I tried snorkeling, as soon as the water went above my goggles, my brain was like, don't breathe in.
The number one rule of scuba diving is always breathe.
But then my brain would like shut off. It was like a Abe don't drown mechanism.
I understand that because you're looking at that snorkel with that hole on top, and you're thinking, if I dip my head in too deep, the water is going to go in the hole. There is, and that's one of the reasons why I don't like snorkeling.
Interesting. Okay.
I will end up with water in my mouth because dip your head down and you got to remember to blow out to clear the water out as you come up to the surface. Yeah. With scuba, it's a closed circuit, so you know you can't get water in your mouth unless the mouthpiece comes away from the regulator. So I feel that it's much safer. And plus which, you always hear about people getting attacked by sharks when they're swimming on the surface, right, or they're, you know, paddle boarding or surfing or something like that. And you never hear about sharks attacking divers.
That's true. I never thought about that. I'll tell my wife that. She's one of the people that reads about the shark attacks. So maybe I've been doing it all wrong and I need to go scuba diving instead of snorkeling. Okay, diving in on you know, the tax issues surrounding the sale of the insurance agency, because you and I were talking at the end of the last podcast after we turned off the recording, and we're going, this is a whole nother topic about tax issues. So walk me through right now, what's the environment like? Because I mean, it's capital gains tax that you know, the insurance agency sale is reported. For most of us, it's a long-term capital gains tax when we're going to sell an agency, because very few people, I think, sell, you know, within the first year or two or whatever that is. So you can tell me about that too. But what's the tax environment like right now? I know we had a big scare last year where we thought the capital gains tax was going to fly through the roof, and it didn't, right?
Correct. Originally, right now, the capital gains tax, the numbers I use are for people that are married.
Okay.
It is 15% on your capital gain under $517,000 of modified adjusted gross income.
Okay.
And then 20% above that. Okay. And there with President Biden, he was advocating for that 20% to go up to 40%.
Right.
So that's why everyone was freaking out going, I need to sell now before the capital gains rate goes up.
For sure.
So that didn't happen. This is an election year, so it is highly doubtful they will make any changes this year.
Right.
Assuming there is a split next year in that if the Republicans take the House and or the Senate, there's not going to be a capital gains increase for the next 2 years. But the question is, in 2024, when we have the national election for president, what happens at that point in time? And so 2025, all bets are off,
right,
from that perspective. The other thing you need to realize is that any changes that were made with the Trump tax cuts sunset at the end of 2026.
Okay. So this 15 and 20% capital gains tax rate, it's over in 2026.
No, there are other aspects to it. The capital gains rate stays where it is,
okay,
for the time being, but there are other aspects to the tax law that will change in 2026.
And would those changes impact an agency owner going to sell?
It could, depending upon the price they get for the agency. It really deals more with the inheritance tax. That right now, it's the inheritance tax exemption is at $11 million. Okay. Starting in 2026, it's going to drop back to about $6 million. So there could be an impact. So for listeners that have net assets in excess of $6 million, including the value of the agency, they should be talking to a financial planner now about what happens in 2026 and how do I manage that process.
Okay. So going back to, and I know when we sold our agency, I was talking to a mentor of mine who sold his software company to, I want to say it was IBM in 2000. And he was very jealous of the amount of capital. I was not jealous of the amount of capital gains tax that we paid, but he was. And so apparently, you know, I mean, he was like, you paid less than half of what I paid in, and I want to say maybe it was like the year 2000 that he sold, and it's somewhere in there. But he's, you know, he was like, you got a deal when it came to capital gains taxes, because what I paid is not what you paid percentage wise. So tell me about how good is it right now compared to historical averages on and then we'll dive into some more specifics and details and doing things correctly. But how good of a market environment do we have tax wise right now to sell your agency?
Well, it's not as good as 2012.
Okay.
Because back in 2010, 11, and 12, the capital gains rate was a flat 15%.
Okay.
Now, in 2012, we knew that the law was passed under President Obama that the capital gains rate was going to go up January 1 of 2013, whereby part of it would be at 15%, part of it would be at 20%. And conceivably, part of it could be at 23.8%. So you had a lot of people selling in 2012 because they could get the flat 15% and be done. And what they were doing was they were electing to make the payment of taxes on a lump sum basis rather than an installment basis.
Okay. So, so that was then. Now, for today, though, compared to, you know, besides that period in time where apparently the government was trying to collect as much income as possible, I guess, besides that point in time, I mean, we're in a pretty good market as far as capital gains taxes go. Is that
correct?
Pretty accurate. And how good would you say, like, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being the worst time to sell an agency and 10 being the best time to sell an agency, just from a tax perspective?
I would say an 8 or a 9.
Wow.
Because simply right now, the country is like $30 trillion in debt. Sooner or later, tax rates will go up.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't expect capital gains rates to go any lower than they are right now.
Okay.
So the only place they have to go is up. So I'd say if you are within 3 to 5 years of selling, I want you to sell in the next couple of years, certainly before the next election for president.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. So let's dive into the specifics, because there's some forms specifically when you're filing your taxes after you've sold your agency, get your check. Tell me about those.
Okay, so let's start with how the tax is calculated, because back in 2011, 2012, if you sold your agency for $1 million and you had zero basis, you were taxed at a flat 15%. Now they've changed it, parts at 15, parts at 20, but it's not based purely on the capital gain. It is based on your modified adjusted gross income. So let's assume you started your agency from scratch. You never purchased an agency, so you have zero basis in your agency. If you sell right now for $1 million, you would go, okay, $517,000 of that is taxed at 15%. And the remaining $483,000 is taxed at 20%. That is incorrect, because modified adjusted gross income includes not just your capital gain, but any other type of income. So let's assume you were selling at the end of this year. Let's also assume that between your W-2 and your K-1 income from the agency, that generated $317,000.
Sure.
So what you would need to do if you were to sell on December 31st of this year, you would have to subtract that $317,000 from the $517,000, meaning that $200,000 of the $1 million of sales price is taxed at 15%. And then the balance, is $800,000 is taxed at 20%. Now, let's move the sales date by one day. Instead of it being December 31st, it's January 1st. Well, since you're selling the agency at the beginning of the year, you're not going to have any W-2 income. You're not going to have any K-1 income. So in this case, of the $1 million of sales price, the full $517,000 is taxed at 15%, and then the balance taxed at 20%. So just by moving the sales date from 12/31 to January 1st, look at what happened. In my example, you take $317,000, and there's a differential of 5% between the 15 and 20%. So that just saved you over $15,000 in federal taxes.
Yeah, there's a vacation. There's some scuba diving, right?
You got it.
Yeah.
You got it.
So I know when we sold our agency, we didn't even plan it this way. We sold in the first half of the year. And so, our W-2 income was lower. And so that probably helped us. I didn't even think about that. I wish
I had. Yeah, but you sold back in 2000.
No, I sold in 2020.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah. No, yeah. So that was my mentor that sold in 2000. And I don't know what he paid, but I think he said all in, like it was like closer to 50% or something like that at the end of the day. So I don't know how that was taxed or maybe I'm wrong. And, you know, I don't know how. But tell me about other things, because that's perfect. Is there any advantage for the buyer, for the purchaser of the agency? Is there any incentive for them to close on the deal before December 31st? Or if you were to be like, hey, you know what, I want to close this January 3rd or something like that. But they'd be like, oh, that's cool.
The buyer really doesn't care.
Okay.
Realize that there are only two ways to purchase an agency. You can do a stock purchase or an asset purchase. In either case, the seller is going to get capital gains treatment unless the seller is a C corporation. We'll talk about that in a minute. But if you're an S, a sole proprietor, a partnership, it's going to be capital gains regardless. Okay. From the buyer's perspective, the buyer always wants to buy the assets and not the corporation for two reasons. Number one, if they buy the corporation, they could be picking up hidden or unknown liabilities. And number two, they do not, under a stock purchase, they don't get to amortize the purchase price. So if they pay $1 million for it, they have $1 million of basis, which they never get to deduct until they actually sell their agency. So those are the two reasons why a buyer almost always wants to do an asset sale.
Yeah. Right. And that's what ours was an asset sale governed by an asset purchase agreement. So let's talk about, like, and I know maybe this isn't as big of an issue, but I know one of the things that came up in the sale of our agency was there was some money in the asset purchase agreement that was allocated to like an advisory fee, or I forget what the wording was. I'd have to pull it up and look. Maybe you know what I'm talking about, but it was something that basically could be. It is taxed at the, you know, regular income rate. And so our attorney that we had involved in the sale of our agency, who had been doing this stuff long, long, long time. And actually, we tried to interview him for the series, and he's like, I'm retired now. I was like, you want to give our listeners some words of wisdom? And he was like, not really. But anyway, and I think he had dealt in a very specific area of the country and didn't know. But anyway. He said to me, you need to change that amount because you are going to get hammered on federal taxes by having that amount. So we went back to our buyer and we said, hey, our attorney says change this amount. And they were like, okay, that's the standard amount we put in the contract, but we'll change it. So tell me what I'm talking about.
Okay. If they're talking about an advisory fee.
Yep, that was it.
The reason the buyer wants to do that is they get to deduct it as they pay it. So if they pay you $100,000 up front, they get a $100,000 deduction up front. The problem for you is it's ordinary income and can be taxed as high as 37%.
That was it.
And so I really don't see advisory fees. The bigger issue is there is a form 8594. It's an IRS form that if you really want to get audited, make sure that the buyer and the seller put down different numbers on that form.
Okay.
Because it's kind of like a 1099, and the IRS is going to match them up and go, wait a minute, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And I have seen asset purchase agreements where it says that the number, the allocation for the 8594 will be done after closing. And my response is absolutely not. We're going to discuss this and agree to this prior to closing. And the 8594 really allocates the assets. And remember, this is an asset purchase, not a stock purchase.
Right.
The 8594 allocates the $1 million sales price over 7 different categories. For insurance agencies, really, it typically only falls into 3 of the categories. The other 4 you never see.
Okay.
But those categories would be furniture and fixtures, a non-piracy agreement, and then, in essence, the goodwill or book of business.
Right.
Now, from the seller's side, you need to be careful about this, because if you allocate too much to the wrong category, you're going to get hit because it'll be ordinary income rather than capital gains.
Yeah.
So if we walk through them, the first thing you need to realize is that when it comes to furniture and fixtures, let's assume I'm selling my agency. I bought $100,000 worth of furniture and fixtures, and I have depreciated it down to $5,000. Okay. So if we say, oh, we're going to allocate $50,000 of the $1 million sales price to furniture and fixtures, well, the difference between the $50,000 and the $5,000 is a recapture of depreciation, which means that $45,000 of the sales price is going to be taxed at ordinary tax rates, which again could be as high as 37%. So I always say when I'm doing an allocation, the first thing is let's keep the allocation to furniture and fixtures somewhere relatively close to whatever the depreciated value of the furniture and fixtures is for tax purposes. So if I've depreciated it down to $5,000, you know, $5,000, $8,000, $10,000, I'm fine with. I don't want that number going up to $50,000 or some big number. Now, the buyer wants that number as high as possible, because the buyer is going to get to depreciate it more quickly than 15 years. So that's part of the negotiation between the buyer and the seller. So the next category that you need to look at is the issue of a non-piracy agreement.
Yes.
Non-piracy agreements are intangible. So according to the IRS, the buyer must amortize that over 15 years. The problem is, for me as the seller, I am going to be taxed on that as ordinary income, as opposed to capital gain. So I want that number to be as low as possible. Now, if the buyer is willing to put a price of $1,000 on that, terrific. But buyers typically are not willing to do that, because if I were to breach my non-piracy agreement and we go to court, there's the possibility that the judge could say that there was inadequate consideration paid for the non-piracy.
Would the IRS ever say that, or just the judge in the event that?
It's never going, the IRS really doesn't care
okay.
that much. It's the bigger issue is if I breach the non-piracy agreement.
Okay.
So typically buyers want to allocate a minimum of about 3 to 5%. So in my example of $1 million sales price, somewhere between $30,000 and $50,000 gets allocated to the non-piracy agreement. Now, if I'm not selling to a third party, if I'm selling to a son, a daughter, a key employee that I know, and then they know that I'm not going to breach this non-piracy, then you might want to make that number lower. But typically, third-party buyers want that to be at least 3 to 5% of the sales price. Anything over and above that, you know, goes into the intangibles. I don't care if I call it book of business or goodwill. And I've had CPAs come back and go, well, are we allocating how much of that's going to be to goodwill? How much is going to be to book of business? And I look at them and I go, I really don't care, because it's still capital gain for the seller. And same the buyer bucket. Really shouldn't care because, right. you know, they're going to amortize it over 15 years.
Sure.
You know, a lot of times there are CPAs out there, you know, they're very good at doing tax returns. They're very good with doing day to day. But when they get hit with, oh, gee, one of my clients is selling, if they don't have a firm handle on exactly what the tax laws are, it can be problematic.
Big time.
I had one last year where my client sold and the local CPA said, oh, the capital gains rate is going to be 23.8%. And I knew exactly what they were doing. And I said, well, wait a minute, where'd you come up with 23.8%? And they said, well, 20% is for capital gains, and the 3.8% is the net investment income tax, which is for Obamacare. And that's 3.8, so there's the 23.8. And the Obamacare tax, that threshold is $250,000 for a married person, where filing as a married individual. So, you know, on $1 million sales price in this example, $750,000 of that taxed at 3.8, call it, you know, 4% just to round it off. That's a big chunk of money. And I looked at the CPA and I go, you're absolutely wrong. I said, there is an exemption, there is an exclusion in the Obamacare tax that says that if you are selling a business that you were actively involved in, and most agency owners are actively involved in the agency, it's not applicable. So again, you need to make sure your CPA is up to speed and knows exactly what they're talking about.
Yeah, no kidding. That's a big chunk of change you could be leaving on the table for you know, tax purposes. So if say you get everything all set up, get everything lined up, and we've talked a lot about, hopefully the people listening to this that are seriously considering selling their agencies have taken some notes. And if they haven't been, hopefully they rewind to the beginning and re-listen to it and take some notes. Or you can call John with Optimum Performance Solutions, LLC, and he'll take care of the whole thing for you. But let's say that somebody's out there and they're looking at this, they're considering it, they're thinking about it, they've been thinking about it for a while. What would you say is the number one biggest mistake tax-wise that sellers make?
Not all sellers make it, but there are still probably the estimates I've seen is somewhere between 25 and 30% of insurance agencies are set up as C corporations. Okay. Remember earlier when we were talking about the capital gains tax.
Right.
So the problem with a C corporation is if I'm the seller and I sell the stock, I get capital gains treatment, that's fine. But as I said earlier, the buyer doesn't want to buy stock because of the not getting to amortize the purchase price, and they might be able to pick up hidden or unknown liabilities. So buyers always want to do asset purchases. Probably about 90% of the deals that are done are asset purchases. The problem is C corps are separate taxable entities. So what happens here is if I'm a C corp and I sell the assets of the agency to you, you pay my corporation $1 million. The first problem is that's income to my corporation. Well, great. How do I get that money out of my corporation? Well, I can take it as salary. Problem with that? That's ordinary income tax rate. Second thing is I could go, I'll leave it in my corporation. Okay, that's currently a 21% tax rate, but it's in the corporation. How does it get out of the corporation and into my pocket? If I take it out as dividends, it's now going to be taxed at 15%. Well, gee, 21% and 15% is 36%. It's just as if I paid ordinary income tax rates.
Yeah. So that moves the needle from an 8 or a 9 on the tax favorability scale, probably down to a 4.
Probably. So a lot of times sellers will say to me, well, John, I'll just convert from a C corp to an S corp and then I'll sell.
That was going to be my question.
Yeah, the problem with that is there is a 5-year rule. It used to be a 10-year rule. Now it's a 5-year rule.
Still not
so good. It says that if I sell within the next 5 years, I'm going to have to pay basically the built-in gains tax at 35%, which again defeats the purpose. But if I wait a full 5 years and 1 day, I now get to treat it as a capital gain and I'm paying 15 or 20% on it.
Sure. So let's talk to agency owners real quick here. Maybe they're thinking about selling. Maybe they're like, man, I'm a few years out. I've got 5 years. Let's talk about, is there an advantage really to any insurance agency in the United States of America being a C corp instead of an S corp?
C corps will allow the agency owner to take their healthcare expense, their healthcare premiums, as a tax deduction for the agency. S corps, you're not allowed to do that.
That's taxed in income when you pay.
Correct. So there, but I look at that number versus I look at if I'm selling my agency for $2 million. I would much rather get the big bang at the end.
Yeah.
Now, if there's anybody out there that is thinking, well, I want to sell in the next year or two or three, and I'm in a C corp, there is the possibility of allocating a significant part of the purchase price to personal goodwill. And we could spend hours talking about personal goodwill. First thing is you're going to need to go out and have a personal goodwill report written by a qualified individual, and I don't do them.
I was going to say, is that you?
Don't do it. Don't want to do it. That's going to cost anywhere from about $5,000 to $15,000 to have the report written, because you can't just pull a percentage out of the air. What you're doing here is you're saying that of the $1 million sales price, let me use this as an example, we're going to assume that 70% is for personal goodwill. That means the buyer is going to write a check out to me for $700,000, and I get to treat that as capital gain. And then the remaining 30% is going to be taxed for like a C corp. So how much do we allocate exactly? The issue of personal goodwill, really some of the things you need to think about is if there are multiple shareholders and there's a buy-sell agreement or some sort of operating agreement among those shareholders that says that there's a non-piracy provision, then the whole concept of personal goodwill goes out the window because it is assumed that the corporation owns the personal goodwill since there is that non-piracy agreement. So number one, has to be no non-piracy agreements in place. Then the other issue is just how actively involved is the owner. If the agency's name is my name, if I started it from scratch, if I'm the only producer in the agency, those are all things that lead you to say more gets allocated to personal goodwill. But if I'm just, you know, it's ABC Insurance Agency, and I'm just managing, and I've got all these producers out there that are developing relationships with the customers, that's going to push down the percentage allocated to personal goodwill.
Okay, so if you are a C corp right now, really what you're saying is from a tax perspective, the only good reason to do that is to deduct your health insurance cost.
There are some other smaller reasons, but nothing substantial.
Nothing 36%.
No.
Okay. So
really we're talking about the difference between 37% and let's say 20%. So 17% of the sales price.
Well, and if you sell them for $1 million, I mean, you sell for anything, that's a lot of money. But like, you know, you get up in the million, right. $2 million, $3 million range, you're talking, you know, somebody's college fund. So you would encourage pretty much all agency owners to switch immediately to an S corp if you're
you
not.
You cannot switch immediately.
How do you do that?
So we
were always an S corp. So I mean that's what our accountants told us at the very beginning. We were like, how do we set it up? They're like S corp.
It's very simple. All you have to do is file a form 2553 with the IRS.
Okay.
To elect S status.
Yes.
Okay. The problem is you have to do it within 75 days after the end of your fiscal year. So if somebody had a 12/31 fiscal year, okay, then they had until March 15th.
And that's every year they have to do that.
That's correct. Okay. So that's tomorrow because today is March 14th.
Right.
So if somebody's listening to this next week and they had a 12/31 fiscal year end, they've got to do this entire year as a C corp. Okay. So it's always within 75 days after the end of your fiscal year end. Now, let's assume that somebody has a June 30th fiscal year end. Okay. You go July, August, now you're to about September 15th. And you go, great, so I'll do it in that time frame. But remember that S-corps are required to have a 12/31 fiscal year end. So in this situation, if the C-corp had a June 30th fiscal year end, they're going to have to file a stub return or a short period of return for July 1 to December 31 to get them on that calendar year basis.
Okay. So, and then after you do that, you're waiting 5 years to sell your agency.
Correct. So if I elected as of July 1 of this year, you would have to wait 5 years beyond that to achieve the full 5-year exclusion.
Okay. Would there be a way, and the answer is probably no, but would there be a way to create a new corporation that's an S corp, and like I don't know how all this works. So you can't. Like, yeah, tell me the problems with that.
you have an existing C corporation.
Yeah.
And you go, I don't want to wait 5 years. So right. I am going to create a brand new S corporation.
Right.
And with that brand new S corporation, as accounts renew, I'm going to renew it into that corporation.
Right. Sure. Bad idea.
First problem is you're going to have to get all new appointments from all of your carriers. Okay.
Yeah.
Pain in the butt.
Sure.
You're going to remember,
we're talking about like 15, 16% here, right?
I understand that. But if I'm doing this with the concept of I want to sell next year,
yeah,
I still have to now wait at least a year to roll all the accounts over.
That's true.
And then I also have to get all of my bank accounts in alignment and switched over. So again, that becomes
big
problematic.
Job.
Okay. And there's always the possibility that the IRS would look at what you did and go, we know why you did this. We don't like this. And you get busted.
Yeah. So, but then, so I mean, it could, that was kind of my end game that I was getting to. You might have problems with the IRS doing it that way.
I wouldn't
want to. So let's not do it that way. That's a bad one. Okay.
Definitely not.
So really, if you're a young agency owner or an agency owner that is not approaching retirement, you know, the best thing you can do, it sounds like, is become an S corp well in advance, just to do it right. And
correct. And let me say this. There are some people out there that go, well, John, instead of me going from a C to an S, why don't I go from a C to an LLC? That's a really bad idea.
Okay.
Because the only way to do that is you have to liquidate your C corp and then put the assets into the S corp. Well, when you liquidate the C corp, that is a taxable event.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
And everything that I've said about C corps is also true if you are an LLC that elected to be treated as a C corp. And it's extremely rare that I see that. Typically, LLCs elect to be treated as either a disregarded entity or they elect to be treated as an S corp.
Okay. And we're kind of winding down on our time here. So one thing that we didn't talk about is I know there's a lot of insurance agency owners that are sole proprietors, maybe even partnerships. Tell me real briefly about, like, what do I do? Because, I mean, I'm guessing that that's not the ideal tax situation to sell through.
If I'm a sole proprietor or a partnership, everything that I said about an S corp holds for them, because with a sole proprietor or a partnership, the only thing they can sell are the assets. They can't do a stock.
Can't sell yourself.
Because they don't have stock.
Right.
Okay. The thing that always concerns me about sole proprietorships is the fact that there is no legal differentiation between the individual and the sole proprietorship. And I hope you have a really high limit on your E&O policy, because if your E&O is for $1 million and there's a judgment against you for $5 million, they can come after all of your personal assets.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, piercing the corporate veil, that's a whole nother.
There is no corporate veil with a sole.
No, there's not. No, I'm saying with an S corp, I mean, you know, there's dangers in that. That's a whole nother topic, but, you know, yeah, keeping your E&O limits high and keeping yourself well protected is a good idea, but you're always safer off from everybody that, you know, everything that everybody's told me, you're always better off going with an entity that can protect you personally.
Absolutely.
Kind of a catastrophic issue. That happens. It does happen. So, well, you know, John, I really, really appreciate your time. In between your scuba diving adventures, taking some time to talk with us. John, how do people get a hold of you over at Optimum Performance
Best
Solutions?
Thing to do is to send me an email, and it's J-O-N, not J-O-H-N. Okay. So J-O-N at O-P-T, perform.com.
OPTperform.com.
And send me an email and I will email you back usually within 24 hours, unless I'm off somewhere scuba diving, but I will set up a specific day and time to speak with you.
That's perfect. John, as always, your information and wisdom has been invaluable to us and all the listeners. We thank you so much.
Thanks, Abe. Take care.